It's Thursday, May 8th. I'm Jane Costin, and this is What A Day, the show that is taking a stand. A stand against the use of the term raw dogging in contexts like this one, in which a CBS News guest describes how cardinals are spending their time during the papal conclave.
One thing we know they're not doing is checking Instagram because their devices have all
I believe the kids call it raw dogging it if you're going to go through a long period of time with no electronic device.
Yeah.
Look, this is a family podcast, so we are not getting into what the term raw dogging actually means. But let me be clear, we are not using it to discuss whether or not Catholic cardinals can use their phones during the conclave. On today's show, the Federal Reserve keeps interest rates steady over tariff uncertainty, and India and Pakistan escalate their decades-long tensions. Great. But let's start with everyone's favorite group of normal, down-to-earth, hardworking Americans. Congress! Over the past few months, you might have been thinking to yourself, hey, the President of the United States is running roughshod over the rights of millions of Americans. The judiciary has been acting to slow him down-ish. But isn't there this other branch of government that could be doing something? One that's co-equal to the executive and judicial branches, and arguably more powerful. The legislative branch or something? First, shout out to whomever taught you civics. And second, yeah, Congress could be doing a lot of things. Like, for example, stopping the Trump administration from sending undocumented immigrants to a super prison in El Salvador. Here's a constituent yelling at Republican Senator Chuck Grassley about this a few weeks ago.
Every person within the jurisdiction of the United States has due process. And we would like to know what you, as the people, the Congress, who are supposed to rein in this dictator, what are you going to do about it? These people have been sentenced to life imprisonment in a foreign country with no due process.
Or take the issue of tariffs. The Constitution of the United States gives Congress the power to set and regulate tariffs. And Congress could overrule Trump's national emergency declaration he's used as a basis for his tariff scheme. Republican Senator Rand Paul and Democratic Senator Ron Wyden tried to do so. Here's Senator Paul on the Senate floor last week.
Congress didn't debate these tariffs. Congress didn't vote to enact these tariffs. The tariffs are simply imposed by presidential fiat, by proclamation. Government by one person assumes all power by asserting a so-called emergency is the antithesis of constitutional government.
But the resolution failed after Vice President J.D. Vance cast a deciding vote to kill it. So in short, Republicans, including Republicans who say they don't like the tariffs, like Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz, voted to let the President of the United States do tariffs. Over in the House, Republicans are working on their big legislative package that's supposed to be a one-stop shop for President Donald Trump's agenda. Tax cuts, raising the debt ceiling, boosting border security, installing a gold toilet in the White House. Okay, that last one is not true. I made that up. Though he is gilding the Oval Office in a manner Liberace would appreciate. But it is true that Republicans really are putting all of their expensive legislative eggs into this one basket of a bill. And it's not going well. Surprise, surprise. Pleasing both swing district moderates and slash spending to the bone, fuck the poor's conservatives is really hard when you have tiny majorities. But ever the optimist, Speaker Mike Johnson said this week that House Republicans are still on track to pass the president's big, beautiful bill.
We can pass that by Memorial Day. That was our original time frame. And some of the people in this room balked and thought that would be impossible. But stop doubting us. We're going to get this job done, okay?
I'm doubting, because to be clear, Memorial Day is less than 3 weeks away, and there is still no bill, let alone agreement among Republicans as to what should be in it. So, what gives? Why is Congress terrified to do anything besides show trial style hearings and posting on the internet? And I say this as someone who loves to post on the internet. And what's the deal with this big, beautiful bill? To find out, I had to ask Annie Grayer. She's a senior reporter covering Capitol Hill for CNN. Annie, welcome to What A Day.
Thanks for having me.
So Congress returned last week from a 2-week recess during which they occasionally got yelled at back at home. What exactly have they been up to?
Honestly, it's a great question. They certainly haven't been voting on a lot of things. This has been one of the least productive Congresses so far. I mean, there's been a record low number of bills going from Congress to President Trump's desk. And that's because the president's doing most of his actions right now through executive orders. He's, you know, not really going through Congress. And in the meantime, Republicans are meeting behind the scenes trying to make progress on their, you know, quote, big, beautiful bill that's essentially all of Trump's big agenda items, from energy to taxes to border. But there is just so much disagreement behind the scenes that is taking up everyone's time. These private meetings where they're all disagreeing about different aspects of this bill, that there's very little things happening on the floor.
Yeah, let's get into the big, beautiful bill, which now apparently that's the phrase we're just going to use for it. That includes everything. Like, there's been discussions right. of how this bill is also going to defund Planned Parenthood, raise the debt ceiling, boost border security. What is the actual status of those negotiations?
I mean, essentially stalled right now. I mean, it's like whack-a-mole right now. So you go into one meeting, there's a group focusing on one topic, and they might come out with moving the ball like 5 or 10 yards on the goal line. Speaker Johnson loves using football terms, so we're always talking in sports metaphors here. But there might be seemingly a little bit of progress, and then that completely contradicts what another group is working on or is told. Mm-hmm. So there's just so many priorities, as you're talking about, that are in direct contradiction with each other. There's just, in general, a huge math problem. I mean, Republicans want to cut at least $1.5 trillion, but they don't want to touch key programs like Medicaid. And that's why, you know, things are really moving at a glacial pace right now, because getting an agreement around any of this, everyone's scratching their head saying, how are Republicans going to do it?
Yep. An offense breaking down as it gets close to the goal line. Seen it before many times. But where are those big divisions among Republicans in terms of those proposed spending cuts?
Well, let's talk about Medicaid, because I think that's kind of the big conversation right now, is how to protect that program. So Republicans do want to add some sort of work requirement for Medicaid. That's a really, you know, hard thing to put in place. A lot of states have tried it. There's a lot of issues around there. So how are Republicans going to actually do that? You know, in terms of bigger priorities, the border is huge. Like, that's where Republicans want to spend a lot more money. So they're very much in agreement on that. But it's like where the rubber meets the road. How are they actually making this happen? That's why there's so much standstill right now, because people start to put pen to paper and immediately are like, well, wait, we forgot about XYZ thing over here. And, you know, there's divisions, you know, geographically, there's divisions ideologically, you name it, we could get into all of it.
And I have to ask, Republicans have said they want to pass this bill by Memorial Day, which is, to be clear, coming pretty quickly. When might we actually see this bill?
That's a great question. I mean, there just isn't that many legislative days between now and Memorial Day. I think they're hoping, because the way a lot of things work around here is there's that pressure right before a big recess that, you know, that's where you can really try and motivate people to get something done. Either, you know, they vote on something or they have to cancel their family recess plan. But there's so much that needs to happen between now and Memorial Day. I think people inside the room understand that that timeline is really a goal, but not necessarily a realistic one.
And where are Democrats in all of this?
Sitting back, mostly. I mean, this is not their bill. This is not their policy. This is not their priority. But they essentially have no role to play here. I mean, that's what we're seeing play out kind of in this first 100 days, is Democrats really trying to figure out how to be a pressure point when they don't hold the power at all in Washington anymore. They aren't unified around a collective leader. They have a lot of different messaging strategies that they're trying, but they have no involvement in how this legislation is going to be crafted or what policies are going to be included.
Here's what gets me. Republicans control both chambers of Congress right now. And as you've mentioned, they've barely passed any legislation. In fact, at the 100-day mark, Trump had signed fewer bills than any new president going back to President Eisenhower in the 1950s. What's driving that?
Well, they're putting all of their chips in this big, beautiful bill basket right now. All of their major legislative priorities, from energy to taxes to the border are getting grouped in this massive bill that, as we've been talking about, have a ton of roadblocks. So with all the energy there, that's sucking up most of the floor time because members are mostly in meetings. I mean, they're not voting a lot. As reporters, we're sitting around a lot waiting for votes to happen. I mean, one vote that's happening in the House today is codifying Trump's change of Gulf of Mexico to Gulf of America. Now, even some Republicans have come out against this bill. They think it's kind of a waste of their time. We still think from sources that it will pass, but that's the kind of thing that Republicans are using floor time to be voting on right now when, you know, there are so many issues in front of this country.
Presidents don't usually have a ton of time to turn their political capital into legislation. And we've seen that with the last couple of administrations. I mean, I think about the ACA debate that took over pretty much all of 2009 and 2010. In recent history, it's really been just in the first 2 years that a president is in office that they have this ability. And given recent polling that shows Americans are souring on Trump's agenda, what could all of this mean for his presidency if, as you mentioned, they have really just put everything into this one bill?
Well, you talk to Republicans here and they've really shuttered that out. They are so confident in Trump. I mean, House Speaker Mike Johnson has really tied himself to Trump at every single turn. He's had to have Trump, you know, calling members on the floor as these votes are happening, trying to convince them to stick with him. So I think Republicans are so focused on staying the course right now. They're so convinced that what they are doing is ultimately going to pay off that they really don't pay a lot of mind to, you know, the polling that we all see about how these policies are increasingly unpopular. But midterms, for, you know, if people listening to this, it's like, oh my God, I can't even think about midterms right now. But they're not that far away. I mean, Democrats are already thinking about how to craft their messaging around this big legislation that could potentially kick millions of people off of Medicaid. And Republicans have not even really begun to think about how they would respond to that.
Annie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
That was my conversation with CNN's Annie Grayer. She's a senior reporter covering Capitol Hill. We'll get to more of the news in a moment. But if you like the show, make sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, watch us on YouTube so you can see my face when I have to use the term raw dogging, and share with your friends. More to come after some ads.
What a Day is brought to you by Delete Me. Delete Me makes it easy, quick, and safe to remove your personal data online at a time when surveillance and data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. It's easier than ever to find personal information about people online. Having your address, phone number, and family members' names hanging out on the internet can have actual consequences in the real world and makes everyone vulnerable. With Delete Me, you can protect your personal privacy or the privacy of your business from doxing attacks before sensitive information can be exploited. As somebody who has been extremely online for a very long time, privacy is really important to me. I don't want to get doxxed. I don't want to walk around in my neighborhood worrying that somebody who has bad intentions knows where I am and could easily find it online. And I don't want my family members to be punished because sometimes I am a bit of a loose cannon and say things that maybe I should not. It's really important to me to control what data about me and my family is online. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for our listeners, get 20% off.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/WAD and use promo code WAD at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/WAD and enter code WAD at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/WAD, code WAD.
Here's what else we're following today.
Headlines.
The first peace offer that the Russians put on the table, our reaction to it was, you're asking for too much. But this is how negotiations unfold.
Vice President J.D. Vance gave an update Wednesday on negotiations for a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine. Vance made remarks in D.C. at a meeting hosted by the Munich Security Conference. He didn't share details about the Kremlin's list of demands that the Trump administration thinks are too much. But he mentioned that the U.S. is focused on helping negotiate a deal that would permanently end the war rather than a temporary ceasefire. Ukraine has said it's willing to agree to a 30-day fighting pause. But Vance said Wednesday that Russia says that's not in their interest.
We've tried to move beyond the obsession with a 30-day ceasefire and more on the what would the long-term settlement look like, and we've tried to consistently advance the ball.
Vance's comments could signal growing tensions between the Trump administration and Russian President Vladimir Putin amid stalled peace talks. You may remember Trump's infamous Truth Social post last month where he said he was, quote, not happy with Russia after the Kremlin launched a barrage of deadly attacks on Kyiv. He wrote in that same post, quote, Vladimir, stop! The president has also hinted at the possibility of imposing sanctions on Russia. A federal judge on Wednesday issued a temporary restraining order to block the Trump administration from deporting a group of Asian migrants to Libya, or any other country where they are not citizens. Immigration attorneys filed an emergency motion Wednesday after it was reported that the Trump administration is planning to deport a group of undocumented immigrants to the war-torn country. Libyan officials denied coordinating any deportations with the Trump administration and said they will not accept any migrants from the U.S. President Trump was asked to clarify the issue during a press conference at the White House Wednesday. A reporter simply asked the president to confirm if his administration is doing this, to which he said,
I don't know. You'll have to ask Homeland Security.
Bro, it's your administration, and you don't know. The attorneys who filed Wednesday's emergency motion claimed that the Trump administration's reported plans are in defiance of an earlier court ruling that bars officials from deporting migrants without written notice or a, quote, meaningful chance to challenge their deportation. For a third meeting in a row, the Federal Reserve didn't change interest rates on Wednesday because of growing concern over the effect of President Trump's tariffs on the economy and inflation. In a statement, the Fed said that labor market conditions are solid, but, quote, uncertainty about the economic outlook has increased further. Co-signed. Fed Chair Jerome Powell gave an update Wednesday.
If the large increases in tariffs that have been announced are sustained, they're likely to generate a rise in inflation, a slowdown in economic growth, and an increase in unemployment. The effects on inflation could be short-lived, reflecting a one-time shift in the price level. It is also possible that the inflationary effects could instead be more persistent.
Yes, he did say short-lived. We're all moving through that together. Of course, while the Fed continues to monitor the economic outlook, it also has to deal with Trump, who has continuously called on Powell to cut rates. Just last week at a rally in Michigan, Trump said, quote, you are not supposed to criticize the Fed. You are supposed to let him do his own thing. But I know much more than he does about interest rates. Believe me, I do not. India's military said Wednesday it launched strikes against Pakistan and Kashmir, increasing tensions in the region. Pakistan claims it shot down several Indian fighter jets. We don't have time to delve too deep into this, but this is the latest in a long conflict between Pakistan and India. Control of Kashmir has been a point of contention since the late 1940s. Both countries control parts of the region, but claim it in full. Both are also nuclear powers. India's strikes against Pakistan Wednesday came in response to a deadly attack last month at a resort in Kashmir where Hindu tourists were shot. India accused Pakistan of being behind the militant attack. Pakistan has denied involvement. India's defense ministry said in its retaliation it aimed at sites in Pakistan where, quote, terrorist attacks against India have been planned. Pakistan's military said at least 31 people were killed by the missiles, including women and children. Pakistan's prime minister said he would avenge the dead. And that's the news. One more thing. The clock is ticking on the 90-day pause on Trump's reciprocal tariffs. Now, we're only about a month in, but the president has had weeks to negotiate trade deals with the countries he's levied taxes on. He keeps saying that at least one big trade deal with one country is coming soon, but as of our recording Wednesday night, the number of new deals sits at zero. Zilch. Nada. A big old goose egg. Turns out, negotiating complicated trade agreements with dozens of countries is hard. Who knew? And every day the Trump administration delays has real consequences for everyday Americans, like small business owners. Many rely on imported goods and supplies to make a living, and they're worried that if the White House fails to make these deals, it could mean the end of their businesses. I wanted to talk to a small business owner who's feeling the effects of Trump's trade war right now. So I called up Chitra Ogarwal. She's the co-founder of Brooklyn Deli. Chitra, welcome to What A Day.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about Brooklyn Deli.
Brooklyn Deli is a premium Indian food brand that I founded in 2014. It's inspired by my Indian heritage, and we make authentic Indian sauces, condiments, and heat and eat meals.
That is of deep interest to me. A person who fucking loves Indian food. So what was your reaction to Trump's long, long, long list of tariffs he debuted in April? Which ones worried you the most when it comes to your business?
It was just panic, basically. Because we make products that have authentic Indian ingredients, we're importing a lot of our ingredients. Also, our glass and our lids are also coming from abroad. So it's like hitting us on a lot of different levels from not just India, but China, Taiwan, Sri Lanka. It's crazy just kind of trying to figure out, what the impact is going to be at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think people kind of forget about just like, where do you get bottles and lids? I have a friend who runs a distillery who had that same issue. So how have the tariffs already impacted your expenses and overall ability to run your business?
There's a 10% across the board that's hitting us right now on all the ingredients that we're importing. In addition, we do have glass that's coming from China. So we're right now trying to scramble to see if we can get alternatives. The one thing that's interesting is that, we get glass from Taiwan, right? And even with the proposed tariff that is supposed to come down, it's still cheaper to import that glass with that tariff than it is to actually manufacture that glass domestically.
Oh, that's wild. So when did you notice a change in prices for supplies and ingredients? And which prices increased the most? And how do they compare to prices before Trump's tariffs?
Right now, we're just kind of just getting a lot of these letters from our suppliers saying that we're going to be passing on the 10% tariff. And they're basically like, we're just holding tight to see what happens next, because there's just this 90-day pause, which everybody is kind of just, waiting to hear what's going to go on. So for instance, for now, we have a hiring freeze. We're not bringing on anybody new. We're not launching any new products or, have plans right now because the times are just too uncertain. Everybody is in kind of a holding pattern right now.
I just keep thinking about how Trump's big rebuttal for businesses like yours worried about the tariffs is just move all your operations to the U.S. and rely on domestic production and sourcing. Is any of that really an option for your business?
I'd say no for a lot of the ingredients. I mean, we have cumin, coconut cream, all these different very, specific ingredients that are just not grown at scale here or just can't be grown here. And in addition—
Yeah, not a big cumin industry in the United States.
No. And the other piece is that we actually manufacture our jarred products domestically. So we're supporting local factories here. But it's just that the components are coming from abroad. And I'd say if you look at the grocery store, I would say the majority of food products have a piece of a global supply chain in them. And it's not just Indian products. It's like, you know, coffee, olive oil, chocolate. I mean, it's just like all of these ingredients that you wouldn't think will be impacted by these tariffs, but are going to be impacted.
Chitra, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
That was my conversation with Chitra Agarwal, co-founder of Brooklyn Deli. We'll include a link to her business in our show notes. Before we go, a brand new episode of Polar Coaster with Dan Pfeiffer just dropped. If you love Dan on Pod Save America, you'll want to check out our subscriber-exclusive show where he goes full politics nerd. This week, Dan digs into smart questions from the Discord community, his take on David Hogg's clash with the DNC, a reality check for a listener trying to reach their MAGA relatives, and his surprising pick for the James Harden of the Democratic Party. To ask Dan questions or listen to Polar Coaster, subscribe to Friends of the Pod at crooked.com/friends or on Apple Podcasts. That's all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, celebrate First Lady Melania Trump on her successful avoidance of both her husband and the White House, and tell your friends to listen. And if you're into reading and not just about how, as the New York Times noted on Wednesday, Melania Trump has spent less than 2 weeks at the White House since her husband was inaugurated in January, like me, What A Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at crooked.com/subscribe. I'm Jane Costin, and I'm not saying Melania Trump is a hashtag resistance hero, but I am saying that she is making what we might call in sports a business decision. What A Day is a production of Crooked Media. It's recorded and mixed by Desmond Taylor. Our associate producers are Raven Yamamoto and Emily Four. Our producer is Michelle Alloy. We had production help today from Johanna Case, Joseph Dutra, Greg Walters, and Julia Clare. Our senior producer is Erica Morrison, and our executive producer is Adrian Hill. Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.